doing this. They said when you got here, the whole thing started. I think you're the cause of all this. I think you're evil. Evil!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
I'll follow you through.
Swallow this.
The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you.
Have you ever heard Candyman?
You moved the cemetery, but you left the body stitched.
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
You don't know what death is.
This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation.
Messenger of God, you do not need to stay here.
God is dead! Satan lives!
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
The animals are contagious! What fire! Stop! You know I did!
Whatever you do, don't fall
asleep. It's time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying.
See me in hell, Mr. Thorne. Hell will shower out our senses.
I can't lie to you about your choices, but you have my sympathies.
It's still a procedure. It's called making a head on a stick.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
There is no one watching out for us, Meryl. We are all on our own.
And there's no more room in hell for the dead who walk here.
The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Something in the middle! Shut the doors, my God! You gotta tell them! Silent Green is people!
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
This is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm all right.
All right, that's good, that's good. And Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
All right, very good. And we do have another co-host who can't make it, Abe, from Massachusetts, but we do have his email of his thoughts on tonight's, I guess, special topic, because it's a...
That's a special kind of, topic.
Well, it's different. Different topic, because we're doing two films
together. Really.
Well, we're doing two films together instead of... but either way, hopefully everybody has their Twinkies. I got mine here. Well, maybe not.
You are a Twinkie.
I didn't get one. Hey, nothing wrong being called a Twinkie. It's better than being called a jackass. I'll take it.
The episode's not over yet.
Would you rather be called a Twinkie or a snowball?
It's a good question. But either way, who we are? We are Dark Discussions Podcast for new listeners. Dark Discussions Podcast basically discusses and reviews and critiques a genre film such as horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. We basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Also, Eric, we do have a website.
We do. You can find it at www.darkdiscussions.com. On that website, there's a bunch of stuff. On the front page to the right-hand side, you have links to friends of the podcast. Up at the top, you have links to different sections of the website. There's an articles section where you can find articles written by myself as well as others. There's an audio section of the site where you can go find every single episode of Dark Discussions as well as any of our spinoff podcasts available to download for free. We have covered so many freaking topics since 2011. It is unbelievable. Go check it out. You're bound to find something you want to listen to. And then on the front page, front and center, is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to support your online artists financially. Producing this podcast is not free. We have to pay for things like hosting and computers that blow up and stuff like that. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing the podcast, you can go contribute there. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them on a random basis quarterly. For more details, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
Excellent. Very well. Very well. And we do have a new Patreon that we're going to be doing shortly called, we believe, Calibre. It's spelled with
Calibre.
Calibre. But that's
it's pronounced Calibre.
I don't
otherwise,
know.
Otherwise, don't put the fucking E on the end.
Well, that's the original way English was written, and it still is over in the UK.
That's not English. It's French.
Well.
So without the E, is it then just Calibre?
Calibre.
Isn't it C-A-L-I-B-R?
Calibre.
Right. I mean, either, it kind of need an E in there somewhere.
Either way.
Or that's just a violent name.
Calibre.
either.
Sorry, I got a hairball.
Either way, we'll be doing that episode soon enough when we have a break from new releases. I found out some very bad news today. I was about
nobody
to buy my Taylor Swift ticket because she's playing at Gillette Stadium August 31st and July 31st and August 1st of next summer. And I almost purchased it, but then I stopped for a second and said, let me check to see when Skiers That Care is, and it's the same weekend. So that sucks.
You can always change one to the other and give Anthony your room.
Yeah, that's true. It's tough. It's very depressing.
Yeah, it shouldn't
be. See, this is why I don't usually buy my ticket until late, because I can always cancel the hotel. I can't cancel the ticket.
Right. Yeah, I haven't bought my ticket yet, but I was going to buy my ticket to Taylor Swift, and it didn't work out.
Why? You're not a teenage girl.
Yeah, but Eric, it's like you wanted to go to see Judas Priest.
That's a little bit different.
It's the same principle.
Wait a minute. I thought we had firmly established that Phil actually is a teenage girl.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I don't know what the problem is here.
That's the problem.
For those who have only listened like the last 3 or 4 years of this podcast or so, this is definitely a something that was established in the early seasons. We're just kind of picking this thread up. So yeah, this was firmly established way long ago.
Phil is a teenage girl.
Well, you know, Taylor Swift and all that good stuff.
Well, the irony is when this was established, at the time this was established, the girls that were teenage girls are now no longer teenage girls.
That's true.
He doesn't age, at least emotionally.
Right. Well, and that was when her best albums were out, too. Red was the best album. That album's awesome. But
why are we still talking about Taylor Swift?
Fair enough. So, well, because it...
Dogs or something.
I already told you nobody cares, Phil.
All right. Let's move on.
Here's the question, Phil. In 10 years, what are you going to be looking back and regretting? Are you going to be regretting that you missed your chance to see Taylor Swift? Or are you going to be missing looking back and thinking you missed a chance to go to Skiers That Care?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You can always get your ticket, sell your ticket to somebody for Skiers That Care. Or you could always buy a ticket and sell a ticket to Taylor Swift. Have to be careful about approaching teenage girls on the street.
Right, that's true, Mike. That's a good question. I'm hoping that Taylor Swift does her true American tour in Boston the following year, because she's just doing four concerts, two in California and two in Massachusetts next year, and then doing Europe, and then she's supposed to come back to the States. Anyway, all right, let's move on. So,
what does she usually do as an encore? I'm just doing this to annoy Eric.
All right, I'll be back in half hour.
her encore is usually never, ever, ever getting back together again.
Maybe she's trying to send you a message. Okay.
It's either that one or it's You Belong With Me. Those are usually the two that are the encores. All right, so let's move on to the next topic. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight, right, Eric? So what is we discussing tonight? Eric?
Hello?
I think
you said he'd be back in about 30 minutes.
Okay. So actually, let's do this. So also, to get back on track, we do have an email, darkdiscussions@AOL.com. Basically, you can email us your thoughts, your concerns, your suggestions, your own personal reviews on topics we've discussed, or just on any film that you've seen that you wanted to give a review and let us read on the air. So if you found a sleeper Netflix or Amazon Prime or HBO Now, or if you just wanted to review your favorite horror film like Friday the 13th or Night of the Living Dead, please send it over and we'll read it on the air. Also, we do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, and it's basically a place where we discuss a lot of things genre. So we wrapped up Game of Thrones a couple of months ago. Now people are talking about The Joker and It and Watchmen TV show on HBO and various other things. So a lot of good stuff there. So just search for Dark Discussions Podcast on Facebook and we will add you to the group. And that's pretty much it there. You can find our RSS feed pretty much anywhere. Podcasts are found, such as Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. Eric, I actually think it's called now Apple Podcasts. Is that right, Eric?
I just came back in the room. What are you talking about now?
iTunes is now called Apple Podcasts.
Okay.
I thought you knew.
I haven't upgraded yet, so I don't know.
Gotcha. So either way,
on the phones, they've had a separate app for years.
Right, and it sucks. So I use Overcast.
Yeah, it's not too good. It's just unfortunate. I use Stitcher myself, but Overcast, Eric is big on, and you can find Dark Discussions on both Overcast and Stitcher, as well as Apple Podcasts. Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the 2009 hit movie starring Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, and Emma Stone, and Abigail Breslin called Zombieland, and another one that came out recently.
And what's that one called, Mike?
Zombieland Double Tap.
Planet Earth. Home to over 6 billion people. Today, our very existence is threatened by epidemics, climate change, and dwindling resources. But those are the least of our problems. Welcome to Zombieland.
My mother always told me, someday you'll be good at something. I mean, I don't think she could have guessed that something would be zombie killing.
What do you think? Zombie kill of the week?
Close. But no cigar. Zombie Kill of the Week went to Miss Cynthia Knickerbocker.
Gotta enjoy the little things.
These fellas really let themselves go.
Zombieland.
You guys want some Purell?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right. That's a 2019 one. But yes, the two films are directed by Ruben Fleischer. It stars the four folks that Eric mentioned. It's basically a post-apocalyptic film, so the apocalypse has already happened. and zombies have taken over the world. It's an interesting film because it's or both films because they're comedies. But they play it a little more straight than say other comedies that are zombie films, such as I guess Shaun of the Dead or Zombievers. It takes place in crisscrossing the United States in this apocalyptic world, and it only focuses on a handful of characters rather than the big picture. So we don't have the scientists and the government and the military and various brigands of folks. We just focus on a handful of characters. And as Eric stated, it was a box office success, the first one, and the second one still has made pretty I don't know if it's considered a failure. Mike,
it's not. It's actually did better than expected. The problem is it's in theaters at the same time as Joker and the opening of Maleficent. Maleficent ended up as number one in the box office, but did way less than what they were anticipating. So it's weird. This is the problem with, you know, basing it on where your box office position is, which is, you know, your number one, two, three. So Maleficent cost a fortune to make. And is probably going to end up losing a lot of money, even though it ended up as the number one spot in the box office, where Zombieland Double Tap didn't cost a fortune to make, debuted at number three, beat expectations, and will probably turn a profit.
Well, eventually. It is not yet. They also spent way more on the sequel than they did on the original, and it doesn't seem to be making as much. So it's not going to be as profitable in the long run, I don't think. Although it may end up turning a profit at some point.
Right. Yeah, the first film actually is the highest grossing zombie film in history. Grossed $60.8 million.
That's true.
$60.8 million in 17 days, becoming the top grossing zombie film in history. The record was previously held by Dawn of the Dead remake.
It was It was the top grossing for the time. It's World War Z. Clearly beat it out.
Resident Evil Afterlife claimed the record the following year, and as you mentioned, other films have passed it. This film, the new one, I'm curious what the box office was, what will be for this one after 2 weeks or 17 days, like the other. It's probably won't be as high because it made $30 million so far, or pretty close to it, and then usually you get a 40% drop. But it could be one of those films that hangs around for a little bit, especially during the October season coming up. For folks who are curious, i.e. Pamela Dunleavy, we are recording this on October 24th, 2019.
You don't need to mention her by name at the beginning of episode, just state the date.
Fair enough. Well, she was one that requested it, so I'm giving her credit.
Yeah, it's been 3 months. We can just, yeah.
Yeah, but it's become a running meme.
I don't think you understand what that word means. Well, anyway, continue.
So that's all I got. I haven't bothered looking at, you know, the people behind the scenes otherwise. But all in all, I guess we can give our thoughts on film one and film two and how we heard about both. So I guess we can start with you, Mike.
Okay. I don't remember. I heard about them. You know, one's been tapped for 10 years. I heard about it through normal methods, you know, advertising, and this one, you know, kind of the same. I really enjoyed the original Zombieland, and I don't know that I would put it in the top. Tip top of zombie horror comedies. I'd still probably put Shaun of the Dead above it, and probably Return of the Living Dead above it. But it's a solidly entertaining film, mostly because there's a good inventive comedy, and I really like the characters. The sequel I also like, but it's got some issues in that it's basically got a little bit of sequelitis in that it's trying to do bigger and better, or, you know, from what they did before. It doesn't really do as much work with character. It just basically ups the scale. I think for me, the humor works. It just doesn't have as much of the heart as the first film.
All right. Very good. Chrissy.
Well, we went to see this on a Friday night date night. We were really excited about it because we both love the original, Nathan and I. And I have to say, I was really expecting, like I do with most sequels, a shit show. While I thought this was meta, meaning it was very aware of itself as being a sequel. But, you know, the first one was kind of a little bit meta too. We had so much fun. I had a great time. I really have very few notes in my notebook because I was just having so much fun enjoying the way that they really just outdid themselves in terms of how can we make this more ridiculous than we made the first one. It almost felt like a Sharknado, but clearly with a lot better acting and a much better script. I really had a good time with this. And we both came out of it feeling like, you know, it wasn't a bad sequel, number one. We both had, I think I had as much fun watching this as I did the first one. And I did appreciate that although it might have suffered from sequelitis trying to be bigger and better, it really didn't take itself seriously, whereas the first one was a little bit darker, which is cool. You know, I love dark, but I liked that this one was so very aware of itself in knowing that it was a sequel, and it kind of played with that. And like I said, it's very meta. It knew it was doing it, and that's kind of what made it fun. And I am also glad that they did not really bring back the Twinkies, and they didn't bring back, like, yeah, there were a couple of things about, like, the dams are going to run forever and stuff, but they pretty much tried to do something, you know, continuing the story several years later in real time without being contrived. I thought it was very natural. So, anyway.
All right, very good. Eric?
I really liked the original Zombieland. I thought it was pretty fresh and inventive when it came out, and thought it was pretty funny and had some good action in it, and enjoyed it quite a bit. I am not a fan of the sequel. I thought all the characters from the first movie became caricatures in the sequel. Most of the humor did not hit home for me. And I felt that our leads from the first movie were phoning it in the sequel. That's what it felt like to me. It felt kind of tired. There was one bright spot in the sequel for me, and that was Zoe Deutsch, the actress that plays Madison. She was really the only thing in the movie that actually made me laugh heartily. Even though she's playing a stereotype that I generally despise of the blonde bimbo, for some reason, her delivery of that really made me laugh. And I've since sought out some other material that she's been in. So she is a rising young actress, and I hope to see her more in the future. But in general, I was not a huge fan of the sequel. I liked Zoe Deutsch, and the climactic scene was pretty fun. And other than that, I was pretty bored for the sequel. So a fan of the original, not so much for the sequel.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I mean, I'm not a huge horror comedy fan, but the zombie horror comedy, especially ones that are professionally made and not like the indie low budget things, are usually pretty solid. I mean, I like, or I should say, I love films like Shaun of the Dead and Zombievers and Warm Bodies and films like that. Obviously, Return of the Living Dead is the best zombie comedy ever, in my opinion. A lot of people probably agree, though. I mean, some of these other films are pretty solid too. Though I usually consider Return of the Living Dead more of a true horror and cult film with comedy, but that's just me. But if I, not including that film and just including horror comedy zombie films, I think this film may be my favorite. I like it a lot more than Shaun of the Dead. Close, a little better than Warm Bodies and Zombievers, and because I think it's quirky and interesting, and the humor works really well within the picture, from the gun standoff and then giving the thumb for the hitchhiker to various other things that are just really clever. So yeah, I love that film, the original. The new one, I'm somewhere in the middle between Chrissy and Eric. Unlike Eric, I usually love the dumb blonde character. I think they're usually funny in films and stuff. And here, as Eric stated, her character, Zoe Deutsch playing Madison, is the highlight of this film. And this film, I felt, was a little weaker because they break the characters up a little bit. Abigail Breslin's character disappears. They introduce a couple of annoying characters like the hippies and stuff.
And the doppelgangers,
exactly, which kind of reminded me of a ripoff of Shaun of the Dead, for that matter. And the other issue I had with this one, unlike the first one, was they did have a little too much CGI in some of the sequences, such as the truck.
It was prominent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that unfortunately took me out, especially after just rewatching the same night. Baby Driver, which was a film that was not CGI at all. So, yeah, I mean, the same night as the original Zombieland. And I also thought that the endearing thing with the Twinkie and the finding out that Woody Harrelson's character lost his son and he was pretending it was a dog throughout the film to cover up his sadness and stuff. All that stuff was lost, I felt, in the part two. But saying all that, part two is still a fun, entertaining, though not a summer flick, because we're in the fall and autumn, it's still a fun summer flick type film and worth checking out if you are a fan of zombies. Don't feel too much endearing quality to the original, because you may be disappointed if you love the original four characters, because in this one, as Eric said, they kind of are a little caricatures and kind of take a back step to the spectacle rather than in the first film where they were the focus. So that's my thoughts. Chrissy, we do have Abe's thoughts in an email that you have.
I do. While I consider Shaun of the Dead to be the strongest zombie comedy, along with Return of the Living Dead, my memories of Zombieland were fun. A solid cast, some absolutely hilarious moments, among them the banjo bait scene, and of course, Bill Murray. Much of what was achieved in this flick, from jokes and certain character moments, traits, felt fresh and unique to the movie, which is why it was a bit frustrating that a lot felt recycled in its sequel, Double Tap. Like how they gave Tallahassee an obsession with Elvis in place of his search for the last of the Twinkies. There were many times I felt the filmmakers wanted to try some different ideas while attempting to squeeze them into this one movie. You have the hippie fortress, the lookalikes of our leads, the super zombies, the quest for Elvis, the marriage proposal, and the whole relationship between Tallahassee and Little Rock. I think if some stuff had been removed and others were focused, it wouldn't feel like it was all over the place. The jokes were hit and miss as well, with the exception of Madison, who was just a joy to have on screen. Which is funny, because characters like this often grate on me, but somehow she works here. I have more to say, but that would be going into spoilers, so I'm going to stop here. Overall, I enjoyed both movies, and I think even though I think the first one is a lot stronger.
All right, very good. So that's the feelings of co-host Abe, who couldn't make it tonight due to work, but generally, a kind of general critique, a mix, like I guess a lot of critics have said.
You and I are probably around the same page, Phil, and where Chrissy is on the higher end and Eric is on the low end, and Abe seems to be about the same spot in the middle.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, so Abe's kind of with us. So we have the three middles. The one very much and the one not so much. And that's about where, oddly, not that, as we said in our Joker episode, the critics can go pound sand. That's oddly where the critics are anyway. We're around 66% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is kind of, I guess, where we're at if we add all basically, our reviews together. Yeah. So with that stated, Eric, do we have two wikis?
Oh, you want me to do them consecutively?
Yes, sir.
Wicked, 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 wicked. Woot. All right.
rare wiki woot.
Wicked, wicked, woot. Zombieland, a shy student trying to reach his family in Ohio, a gun-toting tough guy trying to find the last Twinkie, and a pair of sisters trying to get to the amusement park join forces to travel across a zombie-filled America. Followed by wicked woot. Columbus, Tallahassee, Wichita, and Little Rock move to the American heartland as they face off against evolved zombies, fellow survivors, and the growing pains of the snarky makeshift family.
All right. Very good. With that stated,
look at the wood.
Is this a Mike, is this a flyover country film if all the characters are from the Midwest?
Maybe. It's certainly got a thing for guns and 4x4s, or you know,
banjos,
big trucks, banjos, Elvis Presley, and
Twinkies,
Twinkies, yeah. So it might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting that there's nobody from the Northeast. Like nobody's called Boston.
Yeah, or
nobody's called Hartford.
We all fucking die in the zombie apocalypse.
And makes sense. No one from the West Coast either.
Yeah. Well, there was Bill Murray, but we know what happened there.
Yeah. Well, he's really from Chicago. He's from the Midwest. So.
So what would his Zombieland name be? Would he be Chicago?
Yeah. Because whatever is. Yeah, I guess Chicago, right? Because they're going by not by the suburbs. They're going by the actual big city near them. Yeah. I would think so. That's one flaw about this film that always irritated me, is that they kept on saying that the two ladies were sisters, and yet they came from cities that were completely different areas of the country.
Well, here's the thing. They're not consistent with the rules, because in the first film, the reason why Columbus is called Columbus and the reason why Tallahassee is called Tallahassee is not because that's where they're from, because when they meet, that's where they're going to.
Right.
Now, Columbus is from Columbus and is going back home, but we don't necessarily find that out about Tallahassee, that's where his home is.
Yeah, that's where I think that's where his child died, I think.
Or are we just assuming that?
Yeah, we may be just assuming that you're right.
And when they meet Little Rock and Wichita, I don't think they get the background. They just get their names. Right. Yeah, so it's just at some point people got assigned city names. Madison might just very well have been named Madison because she's been in the Pinkberry freezer the whole time and probably didn't get the message. Right. So you don't really know. So we don't actually know the official rule, I don't think. Is it where they're going, where they're from? But somehow it's something tied to where you're related to. Somehow this thing started in the zombie apocalypse. But this is not a world that is intending, certainly by the time you get to Double Tap, for you to take it too seriously, right? It is, by the time you get to Double Tap, it's a flat-out comedy. And the first film, really, I think if you look at the end credits, there's seven people credited. Mm-hmm. One of whom is Zombie Clown.
Right.
Another
I noticed that as I finished my rewatch this evening.
It's Zombieland, Zombie Clown, Bill Murray, and the four characters. That's six. I don't know if there was anybody else that was in it.
Yeah.
Because they don't even have the people at the very beginning of the film. You know.
I know who they have. I know who they have. Amber Heard. They have to have her listed. Because she plays.
Yeah,
she plays the next
neighbor.
Right.
204 or whatever that was.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, okay. So that must have been the seventh. That was the seventh. Speaking of Madison, more genre trivia. The name Madison for a girl never existed until the movie Splash, because the mermaid wanted herself to be called Madison based off of the street sign. And then since then, Madison has become a huge name for females. Before that, it was only a surname.
Huh.
I don't know if I believe that.
Yep, it's true. It's true, right? Ron Howard said
the internet says so.
That's right. At many places it says.
Well, because before that, you would have had Maddie, would have been Madeline, right? Like Madeline Kahn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was Madeline and yeah, that was a novel.
Not Madison. Okay. Yeah. That I don't. It's you know what? It's plausible.
Yep.
You know. And
I don't believe it.
And it's. I didn't say it's true. I just said it's plausible. But skepticism is never unwarranted. Can we actually talk a bit about Madison? Because I've been thinking about her. Because I'm with Eric and Abe, and I said that shortly after too. Is that she's the kind of character that usually would annoy the fuck out of me, and yet she was delightful.
Right.
And I was thinking about that. I think the reason is that you have the main four characters are sarcastic and a little surly in some of their cases.
Especially in the second film compared to the first.
I've been in the first. There's a little bit of darkness in those characters. Remember, the girls kept ripping off the guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then now that you did add sweet moments between them. But yeah, there's like sort of, especially when it comes to outsiders, a little darker characters. And she is stupid, but she's not shallow and vain and self-centered, which is what usually goes with that blonde bimbo airhead type.
Yep.
Well, right? And there's also...
She's actually a decent human being.
Yeah, and there's also a few moments where she takes a step back from stupid.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait, there's an actual person in there, and then she'll exactly. immediately follow up with something really stupid, and you're like, oh, she's back.
Yeah, like little things like the
you know,
Uber.
Like when she
right,
Uber.
She comes up with the plan for Uber,
and
they're
I
all
just,
laughing at
we
it.
We
like,
were
you're
dying.
An idiot.
I was like, oh my God, because of course the people in the movie don't know Uber, because that's what I was talking about, where the movie is kind of aware of itself. It's very meta. The people, you know, our four main characters don't know about Uber because
right, it hadn't
Uber,
happened yet.
Had not happened yet when the first movie came out. So they're all like, that's ridiculous. That's silly. And she's got this whole like thing like, oh,
she's
no, it'll make money. And like, yeah.
You can give people candy. That's what my parents told me, is make sure if you see somebody, a stranger with candy, get into his car. but at the same time, now this actually I'd seen as an internet meme a long time ago, which is the... you know, like or some one of those things where it's like, me as a child, don't get in candy in a car with strangers. You know, today, literally, people paying to get into cars with strangers. So I've seen this idea before. It was funny applying it to Madison, and because the characters don't know it, and I think part of just the actress herself is charming, right? Yeah. It's you have to have some charisma to make that such a thin part really sell, and she does it.
Yeah,
and it's that she's very sincere. She's very earnest. You know,
yeah,
and very nice. And I think that's what saves it. Nobody, you know, if you had a Madison in your life, she may occasionally get annoying, but she'd be like a puppy. You wouldn't want to kick her.
Right. Oh, yeah. I would be gladly have a bunch
of
Madison.
Oh, we know you would. We know you would.
And, well, no, I'm not even just talking about the looks, because she is hot, but for the fact that she's nice. I'm sick and tired of
mean people. Yeah,
yeah, which is everybody. So it's I would rather
particularly on this podcast, but yes,
not only mean but smart mean people, which is even worse than just mean people. So she's perfect human being in my opinion, because she's kind and she doesn't overthink things to the point where smart people become stupid.
Well, and I'm going to keep an eye on this actress and try and seek out things she's making going forward. Because she's young, she's talented, and she can deliver comedy, which, as you may have heard, is probably the toughest form of acting. And most people who can do comedy can also do other types of acting just as well, if not better. A prime example being Robin Williams.
Comedy is hard.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep an eye on her going forward to see what she does. I'm intrigued.
Well, and also what's interesting about her character is that she is nice and she is kind, and yet the other characters, our original four, right, that we know, are so irascible that after she comes up with this idea of Uber, Jesse said, or, you know, Columbus says, well, it's time to teach Lenny about the rabbits.
Right. Mm-hmm. I love that
like
one.
Being, oh my God, I was dying. But that was just a way of very cleverly showing her innocence, as opposed, because she was hiding in a freezer.
Right.
When you say you couldn't find the off switch.
I don't get this rabbit reference. Is this to do with mice
of
and men?
Of mice and men.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought it was puppies. It was puppies, though, wasn't it?
No, it was rabbits. It was pretty well known.
Yeah, he went and he cuddled it and smothered it.
Hug him and squeeze him and call him George, yes.
And then did it to the girl. Yeah.
Right. So, but I thought that particular reference was interesting because here are these people in the car, right, that are hardened. They've been out in the world. They've been looking for a new home. They settled in this awesome palatial place like the White House with, the, you know, all this. And yet, they're smarter. They're sharper. They know how to protect themselves. Here's this girl who hid in a freezer, and she managed to keep her humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's deliberately why the screenwriters use the mice and men reference, because if you understand mice and men and you read it and you kind of read it thematically, that's sort of the same comment that's being made there. Like, just because you're smarter does not mean you retain your humanity. And I think that was – no, this was not a deep movie. This was, you know, this is just for fun. But still, I really appreciated that that moment was there. I thought it was very poignant and very telling.
And that was my exact point, where smart, evil people, or people who are smart and they become stupid. And like you said, Chris, you summed it up perfectly, that basically what I was trying to say in the first place. And the thing about her that unfortunately kind of hurt the other characters for me was, like you said, their negativity and their uncaring and their indifference to her as a person, as a, another person of their quote-unquote group.
Well,
and
they have,
and that pissed me off a lot.
They have become cynical. And one of the thematic statements in the sequel, as honestly it is in the first film, is the idea of found family. Who becomes your family? It's not who you're born into. It's who you choose. And in certain circumstances, there is no choice. And so it's a big comment on the difference between found family and choice family. Now, here you have a choice family, right? But not really. They're sort of found because they sort of find each other in the first film. They didn't choose each other, right? They didn't say, oh, I see that cool guy Tallahassee over there. I'm going to go hang out with him. No, it was just sort of dumped in his lap. So it's really a comment on what makes family, which is also interesting because when they're being irascible and they're being cynical, and he makes that comment about Lenny, it is also kind of a thematic comment on you're not in my family, so you don't belong, right? Even though he screwed her. You're not on the same level as my family.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to cut you off. But it's one of the things that I found a little unappealing about the sequel is that in the original, you can kind of understand the attraction from Columbus and Wichita. You get what he sees in her in the first movie, even though she's, you know, constantly
she's
robbing
there.
Them and everything. You can see what he's attracted to, and I personally didn't see any of that in the character in the sequel. She was just kind of a bitch. So I was just like, why does he even care? Why is he like? Right. I may have chosen Madison at that point, you know. So that was just my feeling.
I agree.
I think. The thing is, let's remember, especially at this point, these are characters who have survived for
10 years together,
or at least 10 years, 10 years since the first film. And the first film is a year or two, probably since the zombie apocalypse is really apocalypsed.
Mm-hmm.
Because even by then, most of the population is gone.
Yeah, it's a post-apocalypse.
Right. So they're already a bit into it. So they've seen a lot. There's probably a lot of old untold stories over the previous 10 years, and they would probably be very indifferent to outsiders, as they kind of were originally, right? I mean, there was no sentiment between Wichita and Little Rock with Tallahassee and Columbus. Actually, mm-hmm. Wichita and Little Rock can prey on their sympathies. And so, and that's a lesson in that world, is that if you point that people that are sympathetic can be weak and can be exploited. They have affection for each other. And we see that in that film. And there were different people beforehand, which you get because Wichita and Little Rock knew each other before the zombie apocalypse. We see who Columbus was before the zombie apocalypse. And then you have, you know, what is still to me probably one of the best scenes in both films, which is the realization that Tallahassee's pup was referring to his son and not to his dog.
Right.
You know, and so you start understanding these were people who have, you know, who were a little different before the apocalypse, and the apocalypse has hardened them. And 10 years of basically living to die, right? I mean, cutting up presidential portraits for gift wrap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything is kind of, it's a literally disposable world, and they don't have that kind of sentiment anymore. And Madison is been protected.
She's a human being versus portraits and or money.
Well, she's been sheltered from it, and mm-hmm. she hasn't probably killed a lot of, if any, zombies, which again were at one point real people. Or been betrayed by people or anything like that. She just figured she was alone in the world,
right?
You know, and so she's sort of where they would have been maybe 11 years ago.
Right.
And then she finds that community of hippies, and unfortunately they're all going to die soon. So yes.
Right. Yeah. I guess Madison is how Columbus was maybe a month before the first movie started, or a couple of months before the first movie started. That was my problem though with the film, is that they made the four lead characters not as sympathetic as I felt first film.
Yeah, in the first film you're rooting for them. In this film, they're just kind of there.
I think they are banking on, and that might be a mistake, but they're banking on your affection for the characters from the first film to carry over. The thing with Wichita, unfortunately, like her taking off after 10 years because, well, first of all, the idea that you waited 10 years.
Because all of a sudden after 10 years she's afraid of commitment? What is that stupid bullshit?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, there are people like that. But it doesn't ring true.
Yes, I would agree with Mike. That was my problem with it. I had a large issue with that. I don't want any commitment. You know what? Listen, I know a lot of commitment phobes. I left a lot of commitment phobes. I do not have any respect for commitment phobes. If you are a commitment phobe when there's nobody left in the world, what the hell?
It doesn't make any sense.
That's ridiculous. That does not make sense.
But she's banging him for 10 years, sleeping in the same bed. Well, I mean, they were basically committed as a family, and then something out of the blue because of a ring. It's like,
clown phobia doesn't make a lot of sense either. That's kind of the thing about phobias, they don't make sense. But this is a case which I don't think was true with the first film. In the first film, the story seemed, the characters were true to themselves, and the story felt like relatively natural outgrowth. So even like, for example, they recognize we're going to Pacific Playland. They recognize that it was a stupid thing, you know, or at least the adult characters did.
Right.
But Wichita said, hey, you know, this is her last chance to be a kid. And that's how she justified them doing it. Here it did feel like there was a lot of stuff that happened because it was necessary for it to be in the plot. In order to get the jokes, and my understanding is, in reading a few brief interviews, this was something that kind of, and originally Zombieland was supposed to be a TV series. They have they might still have the pilot on Amazon Prime, which they did after the films, but it was originally pitched as a TV series, which is where the zombie kill of the week came from, is a holdover from the TV series, pitch that they did, but. After that, they said, you know, this was a lot of fun. Woody Harrelson said that was the most fun in a movie set he ever had. And I think it was Wichita, the actress.
Emma Stone,
who had said, hey, you know, we should do this like every 10 years or so. And that's kind of where this came from. So which is why one of the reasons they waited. Plus, a lot of them had very busy careers. But anyway, but in this case, they're really just forcing the situation. I think they just got together to have fun, And as actors and the writers and the director, they did it to have a blast. And they said, what are some fun things we could do with this? And then they worked the story around the fun ideas, as opposed to getting a genuine character directed story like you had the first time. And you know, whether it works or not for you depends on, you know, whether it works for you, because humor is so subjective. But yeah, I mean, there is, if you look, there is emotional payoff to most of the character story arcs in the first film. There were really no emotional arcs for characters in this movie. There's no real growth or development except for Wichita, who decides she's willing to commit, but we never see that happen. That all happens off screen because she comes back to be back with Columbus. You know, Abigail Breslin, Little Rock, was totally wasted in this film.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so stuff like that should have been on screen, like her decision to leave Wichita. She just conveniently decides. You can understand why maybe she's attracted to
some guy
to Berkeley, because, well, shit, he's the, like, I can, he's see only, why, he's, you know, yeah, he's the only guy other than her father figure that's single and available.
Right.
So you can understand that, but you never see a thing where, you know, she just at one point at the end of the film, after seeing her for very little, she just decides, no, you're a poser, I'm leaving you. Yeah, where did that come from? So she's really shortchanged.
Pretending the whole film she doesn't know who Bob Dylan is, and then admits at the end that I always knew, and you're an idiot.
Yeah, well, girls will do that. Girls will do that until it's time to break up with you. But yeah, so it's the characters unfortunately aren't as deep. I don't mind that they're cynical, because I would expect that in the situations they have. You know, and this is just going for fun, and if you take it at that, I think it works better. But like, for example, the Babylon community makes zero sense in the zombie apocalypse. Zero sense.
Well, and one of the things that I had trouble with in this, and again, I stand by my original like statement about how much I had fun with this, because I literally threw all that shit out the window. Knowing that all these things were bugging me, and was like, whatever, I'm just going to have fun with this and I'll talk about it later on the podcast. But I was really bothered by the fact that there's this hippie commune living there. They get rid of all the weapons and yet they have fireworks. And so all of these zombies are rushing at them. I mean, okay, how long is this hippie commune there? They're too stupid or high to notice that obviously they've done fireworks before, but they don't have weapons, so they would have attracted the zombies. I don't know. That actually kind of drove me a little crazy.
Well,
I was like Mike was saying,
this movie is really just kind of a mishmash of ideas that they decided to see if they could make work, and that's one of them. There's also the whole thing with the I had something I was going to say, and it ran out of my brain. I hate it when it happens. Sorry.
Well, let me interject while you think about it, Eric. And another thing about those fireworks, Chrissy, is – since they didn't have any weapons, wouldn't you think they would have used the fireworks as weapons against the zombies when the zombies attacked?
Yeah, it really didn't make any sense to me.
I will say one positive thing about the second film that really makes it top quality over a lot of other zombie stuff, and that is the grass is not mowed.
Yeah.
The White House lawn is like 3 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
Versus, say, The Walking Dead, where it's like years later and the grass is still...
Well, mowed. Because the budget for a two-hour movie is much greater than it is for a full season of The Walking Dead.
Right. Oh, and Zombieland.
And I'm pretty sure it's mostly CGI grass in a lot of those scenes.
Oh, yes, it is. Made a good one-liner, like the meta stuff with reading the Walking Dead comic and saying, oh, this is so fake. That was kind of funny. I thought that was a funny line.
Right.
I mean, there's problems. Oh, the whole Elvis thing, the payoff was terrible, I thought.
Oh, the Elvis, see, I never understood people's obsession with Elvis to begin with. Well, so the fact that it was the center of this movie, I was just like,
Well, but you don't have to understand the obsession. You know the obsession exists.
Yeah, and it's no big deal. I mean, it's people like Elvis, they like the Beatles, they like Judas Priest, they like whoever. But the thing is it didn't even pay off because they get to Graceland. It's in pitch black night. We don't even see the rubble, basically. You can't.
Right.
Even...
So that was a terrible shot.
Yeah, it was.
Terrible shot. And the joke wasn't funny. It was like, okay. And then they just move on. And it was like, oh, I thought it was going to be a hilarious payoff or something. And nothing. So.
Well, I understand that the idea of doing it as something that's anticlimactic, you know, of pulling the rug out from the view under the viewers, you're expecting them to get to Graceland and have fun in Graceland. Mm-hmm. And you get to Graceland and the whole thing's in rubble. But it was so dark.
Yep.
Which let's be honest, is makes sense. You're in the middle of the night, you know, in the zombie apocalypse, there's no electricity, or you're gonna have the headlights for the van to see by. But
they could have had them show up at the daytime, right?
Well, they could have show up at the daytime, and they have not really paid attention to real-world logic up to this point anyway.
Sure.
Right? Because poor Madison would have froze to death in the freezer long ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they could have had it better lit. They could have had burning embers, so we could have seen it burnt down recently.
Right.
So the first shot that you get there, go, okay, they're in Graceland. It's dark. Well, I expect it to be dark. It didn't look any more run down than the White House had.
Right.
And it's then on the second shot as they're pulling away, and, you know, there you go, oh, okay, I could see the roof, I think, looks like it collapsed. You know, or they could have leveled it completely.
Right.
Or did something to show that the whole thing had been a mess, and so the whole joke didn't land because I couldn't discern right. what the fuck
couldn't
was
even
going
see
on.
It. Yeah.
And then they end up kind of doing it anyway by putting them in the hotel, so where they have all the Elvis stuff anyway. So even pulling the rug out from them is kind of fun. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was fun. Little things. I liked the fact that Tallahassee is upset that the shoes fit Columbus.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, yep. It's I like the callback to the first film when they have in the first film where Tallahassee kills the zombie with his banjo, and here he kills one tries to kill it with the guitar, but ends up smacking Columbus in the face. It's the same move where he slides under and he swings yep. over. In this case, he fucks it up. But it's not an obvious callback. It wasn't one of the main moments of the first film. I do think they avoided. And one thing I did like is that they generally avoided repeating the same beats from the first movie. So they didn't kill another celebrity.
Yeah.
They didn't have, I was expecting to have to deal with a whole bunch of new Columbus rules, but you really didn't get that. You had callbacks to the rules that were established in the first film.
I remember the thing I was trying to say before, which is the mishmash of ideas. One of the ideas that got thrown into this movie, but just kind of fell by the wayside, was the new evolution of zombies.
Yeah.
Could have been really interesting, but they're like, yeah, there's these new types of zombies. And like, that's it.
Well, and that's
you're like, okay.
This is what I was talking about, where they took the whole double gang is from Shaun of the Dead, and they took all different types of zombies right from Warm Bodies. Right. And so it's like, I think they were just watching a bunch of zombie comedy films before and said, hey, let's do this. And the thing is they, like you said, Art, they didn't incorporate it that well either. Right. They just said, oh, they're like T-Rex, T-500s or whatever the
T-800s.
Yeah.
And I also felt that like at the beginning of the first movie, there were some zombie scenes that were fairly tense. Right.
A little
scary. I mean, not released for horror veterans like us, but, you know. Where is this in this movie? I was really just found nothing frightening at all. Even when we get our first confrontation in between Tallahassee and one of the T-800s, you're not afraid. These characters clearly have plot armor, and you're just like, okay, when's it gonna stop? And it wasn't frightening at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the first film, I mean, I thought a couple of times Woody Harrelson's character was going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And tense scenes from, you know, the bathroom scenes and the Amber Heard scene and various things. I mean, there's comedy inside it, but it's still scary or tense.
Right.
Yeah, and here, yeah. They
All
they,
that was lacking.
Well, yeah. And the problem is, like, so they introduce the Homer as a zombie, and the Homer I think was a three beat, Chrissy. Mm-hmm. You know, because he comes up twice in the film, or three times in the film.
Three times. Yep, that was a three beat. You caught that.
Twice after they introduce him. So they introduce mm-hmm. him, then at the bus, and then again at the very end. But they introduced the hawking, which I thought was a really cool idea.
Yeah.
You know, problem solving zombie. And the only time you see that again, and if you aren't, and if you blink and you miss it, because it's just Tallahassee calls out hawking as the zombie crawls on top of the bus to attack Tallahassee, and you don't need to be hawking to see the zombie climb up on top of a bus. Sure. The zombies from the first film would have done that anyway.
Sure.
They introduced the ninja, which also you could have done a fucking fantastic scene with the ninja.
Right.
Nothing. Not even mentioned after that.
Goddamn thing.
No, you're right.
And then the rest of them are T-800s, which by the end of the film, I don't really see that much of a difference between the T-800s
and
every
Dawn of the
other
Day.
Zombie right. that we did beforehand. Right. Because one thing with the
28 days,
the Zombieland zombies is these are a lot more, I've always laughed at that, it's Zombieland zombies are an awful lot like the 28 days exactly, Phil, the infected zombies. You don't have to shoot them in the head to kill them. They tell them they're infected from a virus. You know, they run, you know, they're really all not all that different from, you know, and you don't see them in, like, decaying corpse mode like you do see on, like, now the later seasons of Walking Dead. You know, the ones that are there are all kind of meaty. They look like infected people. Just that they call it Zombieland, so nobody ever disputes that they're zombies. But all this does is now give them the bullet resistance that they have had in every other zombie movie out there. Well, then... But if you just take the zombies from the first film, you put them, everybody in a closed location like Babylon, and you take away their guns and have a horde of zombies coming after them, then you don't need the T-800s. It's really no different than what you had before.
Right.
And I did think, here's what I was expecting to happen, and this probably would have been a budget issue or a technical limitations issue, which is... They set the fire or explode it, and I was just expecting now them to have to deal with a horde of flaming zombies running at them.
Oh, that would have been cool, yeah.
That would have been pretty awesome.
You get a few flaming zombies running around.
Yeah, because they're zombies, right? The fire isn't going to stop them immediately. You're just going to have a whole shitload of fire zombies running after you. And they didn't do that.
Well,
what would have been cool is if the tower caught on fire and everybody burned to death in the zombie gun.
That would have been awesome. The hippies.
Because, you know, they left them there with no guns. We still have evolved zombies out there. They're still ninja. They're going to die, right? One ninja is going to get in there, and they're going to be too stoned to be able to deal with it, and the one ninja is going to wipe them all out. That is a failed commune. It is not going to last very long.
Right.
See, here was my thing. You brought up the Homers being a three beat, and I noticed that as well. And I noticed that the Hawkings were awesome, and they brought attention to that. And also the other ones, too, whatever the third ones were, that I found that was all interesting.
The ninjas.
However, the reason I think the Homers were highlighted was because there was a parallel there with Madison. Right? She was the innocent. Like you said, she wasn't too bright, but she wasn't annoying either. Like, she still saw the innocence and the beauty of the world. She was still a good person. And I kind of thought that maybe that because you see the Homers, there's that one moment at the bus. Don't worry about it. It's a Homer. And what is he doing? He's chasing a butterfly. Like, right. I really think there was kind of like a thematic comment being made there. And that's why they highlighted the Homers as opposed to the Hawkings and the ninjas.
Which they even say
are angry and crazed and all this other stuff, you know.
Let me add another thing, too. Like, the Dawn of the Dead remake, the Zack Snyder, James Gunn one, they had Twitchers, which did nothing. And so, again, this kind of, even though the Homers were funny and probably had exactly what you said, Chrissy, as part of the maybe, you know, the writers decided to do that. But it also was like, I'm thinking, oh, they just started watching a bunch of zombie films and said, oh, I like that the Twitcher from Dawn of the Dead remake. Let's add the Twitchers and we'll call them Homers. So I don't know. Maybe that was just another odd thing I noticed. Also, you know what? I felt the
the kill, the zombie kill of the week in this film was not as good as the other ones, because the Leaning Tower of Pisa not only was a terribly fake computer graphics, but it just was so ridiculously stupid compared to, you know, the ones in the first film. And that kind of was dumb. It was just dumb.
And it did, right. And this is one of the few, one of the places where they tried to carry a joke over from the first film. And I don't think it worked as well. And I just didn't think the was it Zombie Kill of the Year? Or I don't think it did.
Yeah,
it didn't flow off the tongue quite as easily. Now, I like the one with the hay baler.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That one was good. And again,
I like
the
hay baler. I didn't really like the Tower of Pisa, although I thought it was funny that he put like a fake family there.
Right.
For some reason, that cracked me up, but I didn't like that.
Was that a symbolism of tourists and how the Italians hate the tourists?
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was supposed to be that. I love the hay baler. I agree.
Because that's more realistic. That was what you would have in the first film.
Well, again, and clearly at this point, the whole world has gotten sillier. You know, they toss off, well, it's a good thing. As long as the dam's running, we got electricity. All right, fine. It's not really how that works, because I'm sure the dams still need to be maintained. But it's okay. You can roll with this. This is the world that we're living in. It's not asking you to take it seriously. Where the first film, I think, kind of did. You don't find places with hot and cold running water. You know, they do mention, as I just watched it again yesterday, that, you know, like they're saying, oh, how they could really do with a shower. Clearly, if we still had, electricity running in large parts of the country, they would have been able to have a shower too at some point.
Yeah.
And I think just the script is sloppier, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
The first film, Chris, you'll read, everything pays off, everything comes back around.
Yes.
The clown at the end, the Twinkie, and understanding the Twinkie goes from being a joke to being a moment where you understand this is sort of a symbolic representation of him trying to get some little piece of the life he had with his son back. Exactly. Even the rules, right? Where they when they joke, like when he's a couple of times the seatbelt rule, where which by the way, I did like the scene with Madison in this, which she was. I forgot the seatbelt rule, but little things like when they're driving and Wichita's driving and he's asking, so you don't wear a seatbelt, and you understand that this is going to be a source of tension between them. They're to draw a contrast. But there's all these little things will pop up at the end of the film or near the end of the film. Everything that has a setup, most of the rules that they say have a payoff later in the film where it comes out to be relevant. Some cases only a few minutes later, but it's all there. And you also get payoff of those rules established in this film, like seatbelts. You know, and my favorite one was Tallahassee just dropping down Rule 32, and you know, after he has sex with Madison, and it just drops down to remind the audience Rule 32 is enjoy the little things, which I thought was it was an unexpected use of that rule, but they right, so they don't say, and you hit it, Eric, they don't pay it off, they don't pay off ninja zombies. And they don't pay off zombies, and they really don't pay off the T-800s either.
Well, even the locations, right? Graceland wasn't a good payoff. The White House wasn't a good payoff. It was almost like, oh, that would be cool to have them at the White House, or that would be cool to have them hunt for Elvis, versus, say, the payoff of, you know, the Bill Murray house, right? I mean, in the first
one. I think they paid off the White House just fine. Because
it was more of
they did bring the gun back, you know, the gun where she's like, I see this, and then that does come back. Yep.
Yeah, the Elvis gun. Okay, all right, that's fair.
Yeah,
I didn't think of that. Okay,
I
just felt like a set piece.
But there was a lot of visual humor. I like, for example, he uses the Taft picture for wrapping paper,
right.
and then later, if you pay attention, you see the portrait
on the wall,
with the square cut out. I thought that was a nice little touch. They didn't do anything to call attention to it. Right. It was just there in the background if you noticed it, along with all the other various things they had in the background, like the stuff that they stole from the Smithsonian. It's not a new thing. It's not something that like you got to experience the first time they got in there with Bill Murray's house.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of random. I just want to spit it out before I forget about it again, which is that I did a rewatch of the original, and probably my favorite line out of both movies is when they get to the amusement park and the girls are on that tower ride and all the zombies are climbing up and trying to kill them. At one point, they nearly get bitten and manage to kick the zombies away. And Little Rock turns to Wichita and goes, "This isn't as fun as I remember."
Well,
I thought that was a brilliant line.
And that's something I wanted to get caught up in. It's, you know, a lot of times I'll listen to the Writer's Blockbuster podcast. I've mentioned that before. And one of the things they often talk about when you have something with a premise, like, and one of the ones they raved about was Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do to pay off the premise? And some films get a great premise and do nothing with it. And Ninja Zombies, good example of that. Or is Hawking Zombies. Others, you know, take the apparent and they milk it for everything they're worth. They whatever crazy idea, great idea that can stem from your high concept, you know, do they really milk it for everything? And in the first film, they really milk the Pacific Playland. What, you know, where you could see them sitting, what do you want to see? How about we have somebody on the ride on the free fall going up and down with zombies underneath? How about zombies in in the Haunted Mansion? How about getting on the roller coaster and riding around and shooting zombies? You know, all these little everything you could think you might want to see in an amusement park with zombies, they found a way to do it. The thing that swings, right, back and forth, hitting all the zombies pursuing pursuing Columbus. So they really, really milked it. And as a destination, and I think they milked a lot of what you could for the Elvis room also, for the Elvis Hotel, you know, having Tallahassee putting on the Elvis costume. But it just doesn't have as many opportunities as the amusement park did.
Sure. Right. Well, and then they even had some other funny lines where they brought in some of the other premises, like he shoots at the door because they think they heard a zombie on the other side of the door at the amusement park. And we find out he shot the Twinkies. And so his goal of getting the Twinkies is ruined. And then Tallahassee has the Columbus has a funny line, like, maybe you can still eat it and just pull out the buck shots, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, just funny things like that I felt paid off. And then, of course, a few moments later, they do get a Twinkie for him anyway. So, and that's the thing, is that that all happens at the end too, right? Versus the Elvis Hotel, which is like a middle event. And then they drag it out too much with the doppelgangers, which I think they played that joke way too long.
That was probably my least favorite part of the movie. Because, okay, having these guys that act a lot like Tallahassee and Columbus is kind of amusing for a second. But the fact that they're supposed to be just like them and then they bite it within a few minutes,
right,
just doesn't make any sense. If these guys have survived for as long as they have in the same world, the fact that they run into each other and then suddenly these guys get bit because they're fucking stupid, that just doesn't make sense.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. And also the fact that, you know, they were like, oh, all gung ho, we can handle this. And like you just said, they survived all this time. And then now they go and get, I don't know. I just wanted to see some kind of parallel development there or some kind of relationship development. Or when I first saw them, I was almost hoping, ooh, are these like copycats? Because maybe in this Zombieland world, there's like word of mouth. Do you know what I mean about like, ooh, there's this guy who's like got this hat, and you know what I mean? Like, I almost expected it to be a result of something in the world rather than just these random people who are just like them. Well, and that felt a little shallow to me.
I think you would have gotten in that world. You probably would have had a lot of Tallahassee clones, because there's a good chance people like that would be more likely to be surviving.
Right.
So, I mean, I like Tom Middleditch, who plays, what was the name of the character?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. The one that was Columbus's double?
Right, Columbus.
Flagstaff?
Flagstaff, right. I like Tom Middleditch as an actor. He's fantastic.
I don't even know who he is. I don't even know who he is.
Well, you do, because he was in this movie. But he had a very small part in Godzilla King of the Monsters, but he's the lead actor in Silicon Valley, which I highly recommend people watch on HBO.
Oh, actually, I know him.
A shit ton of commercials.
Yeah, see, he had like, you know, the wig on and all that in this one, so it made him not look.
No,
like...
that's, I think that's his hair.
All right. Well, he died it then. Well, either way, yeah. I mean, unless
and,
you're
either way, and I enjoyed. I got a kick out of the comparing of the rules and the commandments. I thought that was funny. Again, that's hit or miss depending on your perspective.
And that was the couple minutes it was funny for, and then it got real old real quick.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
But here's where I have a
milking it way too much.
Right, but here's where, and you're right, they died too quick. But if I understand your complaint, it's man that joke got too old, and then they killed them off. Well. Yeah,
the whole goddamn thing made no fucking sense. Why put it in?
Yeah, they don't.
Well,
even,
because there's, exactly. But neither did a commune with no guns surviving in the zombie apocalypse.
Exactly, you're starting to understand some of my problems with this movie.
No, and that's I'm not saying you shouldn't that those aren't there. I'm just saying that's the world they set up. You're either going to roll with it or you don't roll with it. But the problem is, as you point out, this is something that happened. One, it happened in Shaun of the Dead already. They did that, and they did it briefly and quickly and moved along with it. And they did it in Seinfeld 10 years, 15 years before that, where there was a whole episode with the Seinfeld doppelgangers.
Yep. Even the DC's done it. Mike, and even the DC Universe has the alternate reality superheroes, right?
Oh, all of the comic book things. Fine, having an alternate reality thing. I enjoyed it. I thought it was silly that they died right away, especially since by this point they knew of the T-800s, you know, if this was the first time they faced them, that would be one thing,
right?
You know, but they already knew about them, and I think it was intended to show off how deadly and dangerous they are. But since the whole thing is not taken seriously or treated seriously, and you have the stupid thing of, and I, by the way, they'd never establish in this world that getting bitten by a zombie. I don't think they ever established being bitten by a zombie will turn you into a zombie.
Oh, they do in the first one.
Yeah. Amber Heard got bit by the homeless.
Well, she says he tried to bite me. I don't think she said he did bite, and we don't.
No,
see
but
the
then
bite
later on, when they initially meet Wichita and Little Rock, the whole ploy they have is that Little Rock.
Oh,
got
right,
bitten.
Is that she got bitten? All right, yeah. There you
and
go.
And also Madison, they thought got bitten, and so on and so forth.
Well, but what we never see anything. Well, I guess Madison when they grabbed her foot under the truck.
That's correct.
Under the bus.
Yeah, that was the Chekhov's gun.
All right.
I'll go with this though. I'll go with this. One of the. You're right though. I mean, they should have had another character get wiped out by the T-800s instead of these characters. Like you said, they were survivors. I think one joke really worked well in this one that was equal to anything we saw in the first film, and that was Tallahassee's ambivalence to minivans. And they keep on forced to take the same minivan over and over and over, and it's pissing them off. I thought that was kind of humorous.
That was a holdover from the first movie.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he shoots up the car.
Yeah, remember when the girls steal their Escalade, they're walking and they come upon a perfectly functional minivan, and then Wichita just goes ballistic on it. Or not Wichita, Tallahassee. They find the Hummer and take that.
All right, I think one of the problems, again, structurally, is that like you have characters with comic obsessions in the case of, they're obsessed with something that they take beyond what's reasonable. In the first film, it's clearly... Columbus and the clowns. And Columbus has his rules. You know that those are the comic exaggerations for that character.
And the Twinkie.
And with Tallahassee, it's the Twinkies.
Yeah.
In this film, Columbus, the rules are there, but it's not played as much for comic effect. It's until you get to the scene with his alter ego. But everything goes to Tallahassee. Tallahassee is the comic obsession with the minivan. He has a comic obsession with Elvis. He has the comic obsession with killing the hippies. right? He's the focus of most of the comedic beats. There is nothing funny, really.
And that was actually one of my main issues with the sequel, is because, don't get me wrong, I like me some Woody Harrelson, but in this particular movie, I felt a lot of his delivery fell flat for me, personally. He was just, like, saying lines.
Well, if that's the case, Eric, I think it's more to do with just the beats itself. Like you said, why did they have the hippie commune? Why did they have the doppelgangers, you know? But, I didn't really bother me as much. I think the thing that bothered me wasn't his deliveries, but the fact that the first film focused on the perspective of Columbus to the point of he was the
narrator.
The narrator for about 95% of the film. Only about 5% he wasn't when, you know, they first get hijacked by the two girls, and they go to their perspective for a little bit. And so characters like Woody Harrelson, even though he's a co-lead, he was more, we learn about him the same way as Columbus learns about him. And so he becomes who he is because he's kind of like part of the narration rather than him trying to do the narration. Like you said, making him do the beats in this film, and they felt like, maybe as we were stating, ideas that they came up with, and they said, let's put them around or put a film around them versus the first film.
Maybe you're right. I thought that all of the characters from the original movie were only about half as good in the sequel to me than they were in the original. And I watched I wasn't going to do a rewatch of the original because I remembered liking it and I thought that would be good enough. But after the amount of, I'm not going to say dislike because I'm not like mad that I saw the movie or anything. But after my disappointment, I guess is the right word, in the sequel, I wanted to rewatch it to see if I actually did still like the original or if my taste has changed since that time. And I do still like the original a great deal. It's a very good movie. And to me, the characters are just different in the second one, and I don't like it.
Yeah, I would agree. They're much different. I mean, Mike, you've given some good points of why they're different. 10 years, Harden, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I don't know that. See, I don't see them as much different. They feel like kind of the same people. They're a little bit more cartoonish. I don't, but the entire film is more cartoonish.
I think they were more unlikable. The first film, you could like them.
Yes, I agree.
I didn't find them that unlikable necessarily. I think they were kind of still the same characters. They're just, you know, they don't have to show their affection and likes for each other in the same degree anymore. I think the problem you had a bit with Wichita and the way she's dealing with Madison is that she's come, and part of the problem is they withhold this from the audience, is that because she comes back for, we don't, you know, she leaves Columbus, realizes her mistake, comes back, but doesn't say that's the reason she comes back. Now, that's fine. That kind of works for who the character is to a degree, but the audience should know that so that we understand it's her reticence to admit her affection rather than she's just being a bitch. Because then after the entire film goes by, then suddenly she's admitting that, yeah, she really came back for him, but it doesn't matter. We don't go back and retroactively change how she felt about the way she was treating Columbus. We just saw her that she left him, and now she's bitchy because he moved on, and she, you know, lost the person she ran away with.
And that whole thing was even, like, didn't they say it was a month after she left that they ran across Madison?
It's the first 2 weeks, and then...
That's not that soon. I don't understand why everybody thinks he's such a... Like, moving on too soon at that point.
Since she makes it clear she just wants to fuck.
Right? It's like, well, you stormed off and left a note. What were you expecting?
Yeah, right. It's like, I'm going to still be loyal to you even though you're gone. It makes no sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like, well, okay, he found someone else.
The problem is she came back for him, right? So you can understand it. If you know that going into it, you see the character differently, I think. You understand why she's more upset that he's moved on, because she was waiting for him to still be ready for her, and he was.
There's a difference between being upset that he moved on and acting like he did something wrong. She was acting like he did something wrong, and I don't think he did.
Exactly. But that's unfortunately not exactly an unusual thing.
Well, no, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying.
And also, why would she think he would think she was coming back? Because first of all, she doesn't even know if they're going to be there. They're never going to find each other again in a world like this. There's obviously a lot of coincidences in this one and even in the first one where they just bump into each other again in a land that's, you know, sea to sea. But the thing is if she's gone and she said, I'm not coming back, it doesn't make any sense that she would think he did anything wrong. So that's makes me think like Eric, which is why is he still with her?
Some of the anger is probably self-directed, but can't admit it. She's angry at herself for throwing him away, and now that opportunity is lost. I think another problem you have with Wichita is that you have these four characters, and each one has relationships with two other people. And that is, like, you see Columbus interact a lot with Wichita and Tallahassee. He almost never interacts with Little Rock. Little Rock interacts with Wichita and Tallahassee, never really interacts with Columbus. Tallahassee interacts with Columbus and with Little Rock, but never with Wichita. When Wichita comes back, she's got nobody to interact with because she's alienated from Columbus, or she's got that fake relationship going on where she's not willing to admit she was coming back for him. And the only person she could be honest with other than that was Little Rock, and Little Rock is gone. So you might have had an opportunity to see a conversation with them to understand her point of view, but you never get that.
And well, so that she did it all to herself, so she has no right to complain.
Well, but then you could have had a scene where Little Rock says something like that, you know, don't be bitchy, you did this all to yourself, because she may be understanding why she goes back, but because Little Rock is gone, you can't explore that aspect of the character, and everything ends up being a little bit distanced from it, and she just comes across as bitchy.
Right. Well, and another thing that was odd, too, is that Little Rock wanted to break away from the parents. Are they trying to say, and they kept on focusing on Woody Harrelson's character as the parent, but were they trying to also say that that Wichita was kind of a de facto parent, even though she's really a sister? Because why would she bail on Wichita, too? You know.
Well, and they don't show that, and they do make it clear that she's, which happens usually a little younger than this, but it does happen when you hit adolescence that you kind of want to get away from your family, and there's good reasons for that. And Wichita is what happens a lot when you're the older, much older sibling and your parents have died. She ends up being the parent figure to her little sister.
Yeah.
But they don't set that up. All they do is set up that Tallahassee is overbearing with her. Mm-hmm. Right. And they don't say, and we'd never get an explanation for why she takes off. I really suspect that there's a lot of stuff that hit the cutting room floor, you know, like stuff that might have had to do with the other zombies, with the story with Little Rock and Wichita, and they just cut it because it didn't work, or it wasn't funny, or they needed to streamline the film and just get it moving, and they probably ended up losing a lot. That's my suspicion, because it feels like there's a lot of things that should have been developed more. And these are relatively competent screenwriters. These are the guys that wrote the first Zombieland and hit everything. Also wrote the first Deadpool film, and I think they nailed that one too. Again, they had a lot of setup and payoffs. Here, there's a lot of setup with no payoff, or payoff with no setup.
Right.
It makes me wonder if a lot of that hit the cutting room floor.
You could be right. You could be right about that.
Also, I felt that like the first film, they were a unit, whether it was you know, the two of them alone, you know, the two girls alone and two guys alone, or when they finally come together as a four. But in this new film, they, especially 10 years later, Zombie Apocalypse, we've seen all those films. They were very lackadaisical also, which made me feel that this film was more of set pieces than a real zombie comedy film. Because, again, you know, I mean, a 23-year-old woman leaving the people she knows are part of the crew. It's, you know, the gazelles stay together because the lion can't take them all out. And then she goes off with, you know, and there's criminals out there, as we've seen in The Walking Dead and other films, the sexual assaults, murders, all these type of things. And that kind of took me out a little bit, that the trustingness of strangers in this film compared to the first film, where they didn't even trust each other at first when they met.
True. There's also the fact that I maybe my timeline is messed up in my head, so call me out on this if I'm wrong. But it seems to me that Zombieland was, I mean, we all know that back when 28 Days Later came out, it kind of triggered the wave of zombie media we've had recently. But I think Zombieland really was the leading edge of when it got crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you had your Walking Dead and you had your World War Z and you had all these zombie movies that came out. So maybe just as a subgenre, it's been played out so much over the last 10 years that it can't be as effective as it was in 2009.
But you know what's
odd, though? Way too familiar.
But even if that's the case, I can rewatch 28 Days Later and the Dawn of the Dead remake and Zombieland and Shaun of the Dead and, you know, various other zombie type films of that era from 10 to 14 years ago, and they still hold up. Really,
that's a fair point. Yeah. Okay.
So. Yeah, I think. Look, this was something they were going for laughs, and like you introduce something like the ninja zombie or the not to keep harping on this point, the Hawking zombie, you introduce those to have a scene later where people are shitting their pants.
Right.
At least that's what I would think.
Sure.
And there is no attempt to shit pants in this film.
Right.
So,
yeah, because the warm bodies, they do it, right? They have these, the bonies.
The boners or whatever.
Yeah, the bonies. And they pay off at the end. Here, they introduce them, basically, these special zombies, and they don't pay them off. It's almost like, we're clever. We can, you know, have different types of zombies, but they just don't pay them off.
Right.
And I think they made a conscious decision, and maybe it's in the editing room, but they made a conscious decision to just amp up the wacky and not worry about the scary in this film. And that's a choice. You know, and unlike, you know, but you can point to other zombie comedies and, you know, like Shaun of the Dead does basically take the zombies seriously. It's the characters that are silly. The universe could very easily be the Night of the Living Dead, original Dawn of the Dead universe.
And because they have that, they go with the very common English humor that still works today in that film, but they place that comedy in a zombie apocalypse.
Or I'll even go with going back to Abbott and Costello. When they do Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, they play the universal monsters straight in that film.
Absolutely.
Lon Chaney Jr. is still like the haunted man who becomes a werewolf. You know, it's a wacky scheme, but it's no crazier scheme than you see in, you know, House of Frankenstein or Son of Frankenstein or any of those films, any of the sequel films.
Right.
It's the wacky part is Abbott and Costello. Well, here the wacky part is, look at the Homers, you know, with the zombie getting its tongue stuck on the pole. Who is, by the way, if you noticed, was dressed as Homer Simpson.
Right.
With the white polo shirt and the blue jeans and, you know, bald with a little bit of scrub.
We got it.
The zombies are part of the joke until they're not supposed to be, but they never really give us a dangerous situation. They don't put us outside with our doppelgangers as they're fighting the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
When they come back and they're bit, they brush it off. Oh no, I've had that tattoo there for a long time. That makes no sense 10 years into the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
That whole,
it also doesn't make sense that they did not execute them immediately.
Right. And that,
oh, you got bit. Blam. Done.
Right. And because they don't even have the affection for them that you could say there was the affection for Madison, where he lets Madison go.
Right.
So yeah, it's just, that's the kind of thing you see in a flat out spoof. Right. And admittedly, that section is kind of a spoof, but if this is supposed to be the thing to help drive home how dangerous the T-800s are, it undercuts that dramatic thing. But I think we're beating a lot of the same.
Let me talk,
just to say something positive about this movie.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of time crapping on it, but I will say that I did enjoy the climactic scene of the movie. Even though it reached utter heights of ridiculousness.
Oh my god, it was just
was
fun,
a lot of
though.
Fun.
I didn't like the ex-do back in Nevada appearing out of nowhere.
Right. That was going to happen.
I guess. Yeah, I didn't even think of it, but you're right. I should have guessed that was going to happen. And that's what I wanted to talk about next, too, was the Nevada character. What did you guys think of her? I didn't think they developed the character
enough. But I like Rosario Dawson. It was fun.
It was. We need to find a partner for Tallahassee, and that's what they did.
Out of all the things in the movie that I had problems with, that wasn't one of them.
I was just going to say, I like Rosario Dawson a lot. However, it just felt like it was a cameo for her, where
it was
in a zombie film, and let's just bring her in. Because then, I don't know.
Right.
And so it was. I just kept on looking at her as, oh, that's Rosario Dawson, not the character. Well, Woody Harrelson's as big as anybody, but he was Tallahassee, you know? So I think that was a problem.
No, I was just going to say, I actually liked it. It was so interesting because it was definitely in contrast to, you know, the troubled relationship between Wichita and Columbus. And, you know, as my husband pointed out, because I was just like, oh, look, a commitment phobe. Females aren't usually like that. And he goes, no, you're right, because she's actually the man. Think about how lame Columbus is. And I was like, oh, you're right. I thought it was an interesting contrast because here you have the woman, right, pursuing Tallahassee. So Nevada is pursuing Tallahassee. We're on the flip side. Wichita is running away from Tallahassee. And even when she comes back, she can't express that's why she comes back. So
you
thought that was,
you mean Columbus? Not, she ran away from Columbus.
She ran away from Columbus, correct. Sorry about that. So, yeah, I think that was an interesting contrast. And I also, I have to admit, part of what attracts me to any apocalyptic movie like this is just the way they show the world. And the whole Hound Dog Hotel, where you walk in and it's all of this tacky, crazy, colorful stuff, you know, against the backdrop of this world that has died, just makes it so interesting. But like Eric said, we've all been kind of crapping on this movie, but the reality is I think it was just fun. Like, if you just let it go and just go, whatever. We're just nitpicking to talk about
it. But I also want to be careful about, for anyone who has, I thought it was funny. I thought there were a lot of gags that worked. And I thought when they get the bus and they roll out and they blow out the tires, you know, I thought that was funny.
That was good.
Yeah, that was great.
That was well timed.
Oh, and then the clown bus or ice cream truck.
The clown bus and everything with Madison. The problem is, you know, we've seen it once. It's hard to remember. What I have to praise about the film is, for me, the gags worked, but I can't remember necessarily the exact lines and the gags because I haven't watched this, you know, 7 or 8 times like I have the original Zombieland.
I'll tell you,
what I can do is remember the story beats, and the story beats are unfortunately where the film falls short.
Well, and I'll say why. The beats, to be honest, if this was not a sequel to a film that everybody loves with four characters that everybody loves, I think we would be looking at it a little differently. But the nostalgia of the first, and oh, they're bringing back our favorite characters. It's like bringing back, say, a Star Trek or a Star Wars or some other franchise, and the film sucks because it's as it's. You see what I'm saying? Versus, say, just starting.
But see, I think this is. You know. I think this is something like Gremlins 2, where Gremlins had a mix of serious and silly, and Gremlins 2, they just fully embraced the Looney Tunes aspect of it.
I still haven't seen Gremlins 2.
No, you do. It's a good film.
It's fun. It's good, Eric. You should see it. But it
went for the silly rather than trying to duplicate what they had in the first. Whereas I think one of the worst sequels to me, and I know there's people who grew up in it now as children who love it, and they're wrong, and that's Ghostbusters 2, where they overtly tried to mimic things in the first film. It's, oh, they like slime in the first film? We'll throw a ton of slime in there. They liked the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? Well, this time we'll do, you know, the Statue of Liberty. They did all these things that were clearly just meant to mimic what you did in the first film and did it poorly. And, you know, that I think is what the apprehension was with this film. If you don't like the direction, it's one thing you say you don't like the direction it went in, fine.
Oh, it's still a good film, though.
But I think what they have is a solid film. And given what you have in a lot of sequels ever made, this one succeeds because it doesn't try to be the first film. It does its own thing, and if you accept it on that terms, it's fine. You know, it's not as strong, but I don't expect sequels to be as strong unless they're John Wick.
This is definitely not a bad film. I mean, it's decent and it's fun. As Chrissy said, it's a blast at points, but again, it's hard to overlook the first film, and I think that's what is the problem with it for me. And as Eric mentioned, there's scenes that's like, why even have it in there? And also what you said, Mike, too, which is they had a bunch of good gags that, or they thought were good gags, and they said, let's make a movie around it with characters that everybody loves. Another thing we didn't bring up, and I thought it was hilarious, was the peanut allergy. That was awesome.
That was my first thought. Right.
Yeah, that was my first thought too, actually.
She's eating nuts.
Wow, you guys are brilliant.
Eric.
Yeah.
Can I get like a Beavis and Butthead giggle out of that?
Nuts.
She's eating nuts.
Oh, that's what she said. That's what she said.
No, because she was eating nuts.
That's what she said.
Say anything. Her mouth. Yeah, nuts in her mouth. Full of nuts.
Wow. This just went downhill fast.
Yes, it did. But, that was my first thought, was that she's having an allergic reaction, and she just didn't aware that she was allergic to nuts. And then it went into, oh, right, you know, yeah, zombie infection, so now she's got caught. See, I just thought whatever the virus, because she's been sitting in a freezer for so long, she hadn't been exposed to the virus, and so now she got the virus. I tend to work under the assumption that people that are wandering around are the people who can't get the virus by just catching a virus.
Well, I thought she got the virus because she got bit on the shoe. Obviously, that was a checkup.
It was an intentional head fake.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And also, they did make a point. Oh, I'm sorry. That's my email on my phone. Sorry. They did make a point of showing them throw her bag outside the car when they pulled off outside the minivan. And I went, oh, I bet it's the EpiPen. I bet her EpiPen's in her bag. That's kind of what Ashton and I both thought. Because they focused on it. Like, we're done. And they threw it out. And they, you know, they didn't have to show any of that.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God, they showed that for a reason. So I was not surprised when she did come back.
Right. It was an awesome way she came back, too, right? Driving the same vehicle that everybody wanted to avoid. And she's playing the music, too, as they're driving. It's like, that's hilarious. It was awesome. Yeah.
Madison was definitely the best part about this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Madison rules. I was very upset at the very end of the film when the five of them are driving away, and it's Nevada and not Madison in there instead.
Mm-hmm.
Madison stayed with the hippies, so she's dead.
Yeah, right. She hooked up with Berkeley.
That's awesome. Maybe there are a few conservatives in Hollywood that we just don't know about. That's awesome. So Madison ruled. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm kind of sorry that they cut her loose because I think she could have been an interesting character. But I, you know, they had a nice group, and now everybody's paired off except now you have Little Rock as the odd person out
again. Right? Again. You're right. And she was the one.
Again. And I don't know if they just ended up having to cut a lot of her story because it wasn't working, if she wasn't available to film as much as the other actors were. I don't know what the story was behind the scenes, but on screen she's not well served. And I'm not saying that if somebody wants to get up in arms, I'm not saying that as a young woman she has to run off and get married at 21 or something. I'm saying that she clearly went out in search of somebody and we don't get like that story of, well, I found myself and I can be happy by myself. It's not about that she's young, she's horny, she wants to fuck somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The story.
This isn't the same world. Yeah. Right. It's not like there's bars that are open, you know.
Right.
Very little opportunity.
Right. And then at that age, everybody's a rabbit. So if you're that age in the apocalypse and there's no one around, it's a little I can see how frustrating it can get and so forth.
You're finding the nearest sheep farm, you know, and
oh jeez. Like I have to go there.
Oh. Of course he's gonna go there.
I live in a lot of farm country, so yeah.
And he just watched Isolation recently.
Oh, that too, yeah.
Yeah,
actually, because my double feature recommendation was Isolation and Black Sheep, and Black Sheep does use the sheep fucker joke.
Yes,
they do. They do. Yes. Yeah. And those were good films. Yes. Yeah. Actually, Black Sheep is a great horror comedy.
You know, when I saw that was going to come out, I got all excited for it, and then when I finally got to watch it, I thought it was kind of dumb. But anyway, this movie.
I think Black Sheep and Zombievers would make a good double feature.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, you're right about that.
Right, well, because both of those films you think are going to be stupid and horrible, and then when you watch them, they're really good films.
But you do have to end with Zombievers because you can't top the theme song. Yeah. Right. You got to end the song.
Yeah.
But we
gotta walk away humming Zombievers.
Way off topic.
Well, let me ask you this. These films, since they're road movies and they have quote unquote hip characters, did these films have good soundtracks, do you think?
Yeah.
They're fine. Okay, you know what? This is a new level of nitpicking I'm about to reach here. so you can shout me down. But I am a Metallica fan. I like Metallica. I had forgotten that they opened the first movie with a Metallica song.
That's right.
So upon my rewatch tonight, I saw that they opened the first movie with a song For Whom the Bell Tolls Metallica while they're killing a bunch of zombies. And that's awesome because that song is about war.
The stripper zombie. How about that?
And it's appropriate, but like this movie had almost twice the budget of the first movie, and the song they chose to open the movie with is Master of Puppets, which is a song about drug addiction, and it's not thematically appropriate. Like, off the same album, there's a song called Battery that's much more appropriate for zombie killing. And so that's my new level of nitpicking. They used the wrong Metallica song at the beginning of the sequel.
All right. Yeah, a little nitpicking, I guess. Yeah,
it's got a fine soundtrack. The problem is we just did for Cinema a la Carte, we just did Baby Driver, which has a fantastic soundtrack.
It's hard to measure up.
Yeah, it's fine. I actually let me ask you, did you stay for the post credit sequence?
No, I was already on my way out the door when I heard it start, but I didn't even give a fuck at that point. I just wanted to get out of there, so I left.
Bill Murray is the only person in the film that actually looks older than the first one. Well, Abigail Breslin. I forgot about that.
Emma Stone doesn't look older. The rest of them look older. Not necessarily 10 years older, but they do look older, having just rewatched both movies. They do look older. Bill Murray looks obviously older.
Yeah.
But, of course,
they didn't do The Irishman, right, where they unage him.
No.
Yeah.
No, because that would have probably added $10 million more into the budget. So what happens is there is a post-credit sequence, and Columbus comes on with a voiceover basically expressing his regret for murdering Bill Murray in the first film.
He buried him.
And they murder, and they want to make up for that fact. And by the way, there's a good example of not taking the world seriously. There was nobody there. Nobody would have any reason to know how Bill Murray died.
Right.
Right. So, again, we're not taking this seriously. If somehow this woman in
Nevada.
In Graceland has somehow known that Bill Murray was murdered by accident by someone who thought he was a zombie. But they give us a scene of back to day one of the zombie apocalypse. And Bill Murray is doing a press tour for Garfield 3. And
was it a film? I don't even know if it was.
No, it wasn't a film. There was Garfield 2. And if you remember his when he was dying in the first film,
they say Garfield.
Do you have any regrets? Well, Garfield. So there was a joke to that. And they ask him in this film, and one of the questions on the press tour is, why did you do this? He says, to be honest, drugs cost a lot of money.
That was awesome. Right.
He's being interviewed with Al Roker. Al Roker's trying to get him to do the hairball sound effect. And then he's taking a picture of himself and Bill Murray doing the hairball thing. And then Al Roker starts to vomit and turns into a zombie. And carnage starts. And they have Murray moving through the studio and killing zombies and fighting off zombies to the theme of to Kenny Loggins' "That's All Right" from Caddyshack.
That's right.
And so that was a fun little bit to show Bill Murray surviving in the zombie apocalypse. The problem is when you look at Bill Murray, it's clearly 2019, but Bill Murray, it's not 2009 Bill Murray. And the only sad thing is knowing that they were talking about doing one of these every 10 years. There's a good chance you're not going to see Bill Murray in Zombieland 3.
Yeah. Right. Oh, he's aged a lot. I mean, he looked.
Really, oh yeah.
At this point, I really just hope there isn't a Zombieland 3.
I will say this about Bill Murray. In the first film, he said that he was playing golf and he would go to the mall because he knew how to do the zombie makeup. They never paid that off, and I thought they were going to do that in this second film because they. You know, because right after they kill Bill Murray, they basically go right to the amusement park. So it was just action. But I thought they were going to say, you know what? Bill Murray used to go out looking like a zombie. All we have to do is do that, and I think we can be okay. And they never did that. I thought they were going to do that.
But it was one of those interesting thing about Zombieland is really there are not a lot of zombies.
Right.
You know, there are a few places where they're clustered, but they go through long stretches. This isn't like Walking Dead where.
Well, they're going through.
They often will have a zombie in the background if they're out, you know, and you can see off in the distance. You know, this is, you know, they're a more prevalent threat here. And what you would expect, right? In this country, most of the populations are clustered in cities. Yeah. Zombies would be stuck behind doors. Many of them may have, you know, wandered off cliffs or what have you over the years. And, you know, the population density in the Midwest is very, 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 very low. So you would expect there, you know, you to have a lot of places to go where there won't be a lot of zombies. So I don't think it would be necessary to do that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I think it was fine. I like how this was because I'm so used to seeing zombies in cities, and this is much better because it feels more refreshing because it's zombies in the, you know, the plains or the con country or whatever. And so yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if I go to a con country of Iowa or Oklahoma or Nebraska or wherever they've been, you're not going to see that many people. Therefore, you're not going to see that many zombies. So I felt that was fine because a lot of the set pieces for the first and the second are stopping at the roadside shows that happen to be, you know, like you know, they could have had the world's biggest ball of twine type of event too, and they just didn't. But I mean, you know, they have the Graceland little museum. They have the Indian Native American Indian shop in the first one, and you know, these things aren't in big cities. They're just on the road in the middle of nowhere where you would stop at, you know, rest areas or whatever. And so you're right that you would only find a person here or there. In these places, you wouldn't find, you know, the mobs of them that we saw in Black Summer in the city, you know. So I think that worked, Mike. I liked it. Yep, it worked for me. I assume that's what you're saying, right? That was good, right? That it was legit.
This is not something where the zombies are evenly dispersed throughout the world. There's just, and I think 10 years into a zombie apocalypse, you could probably you know, go a long time without seeing a zombie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As long as you stay away from the city centers.
Right.
Absolutely.
Which is why it was silly that they decided to go to D.C.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. Also, I'm curious, too, is... Right. And by calling the movie Zombie Land, it takes away that question, which is, wouldn't all the zombies just starve and die like they were doing in 28 Days Later? But by calling it Zombie Land, it could be, you know, it's just zombies. It doesn't matter. I mean, they could be dead and just reanimated like in World War Z or something. I don't know. Just something. All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up?
We forgot.
But yeah, Eric, you should check out the Bill Murray thing. It is kind of funny.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube it. I didn't really care to see the cameos by the newscasters, but the whole bit with Bill Murray clubbing everybody and the Caddyshack music going was kind of cool. Chrissy, did you get to see the Bill Murray cameo at the end? You said you did, right?
Oh, yeah, we really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you know, we completely cracked up. We just had a great time with it because we knew it was silly. We knew it was over the top. We knew it wasn't connected, but we were just kind of enjoying all of it, you know. So yeah.
I know that they just wrapped a new Ghostbusters with, quote unquote, the original cast. Obviously, it can't be all because Harold Ramis has passed. But I'm going to be very interested to see what Bill Murray looks like in that film, never mind Dan Aykroyd, based off of how much he's aged. Even since a couple of years ago when I saw him singing the national anthem at the Cubs game. So I don't know how that's going to work out. But anyway, all right. So I guess we can give our final thoughts and whatnot. But before we do that, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it wherever you found this podcast.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric have just recently started a new podcast, and one's coming out shortly, and the second episode we just recorded. What's that all about?
So the new podcast is Cinema a la Carte. We have recorded two episodes. Have we released any?
Not yet.
We have not released any. We're going to save up about 30 of them, and then we'll release them all at once.
In about five years,
as we record one episode a month. The first episode we did was about hostels. Hostels, Eric?
Yeah.
Okay. I got it right finally.
I could dispute the pronunciation, but I'm not going to because you finally put the S on the end.
Okay. not hostile, but hostels, not hostile. Yeah. And the second episode we just did was about Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. And we have a third episode that we'll be recording sometime in the middle of November. And what we're each doing is picking a movie that would probably not be a Dark Discussions podcast episode, especially now that we have another outlet, because we've taken some weird diversions in Dark Discussions over the years. Yeah. And so this is intended to be the outlet for those types of films. And maybe if something new comes out that we really want to discuss that we'll break from the pattern. But right now the pattern is we're rotating. Eric picks a movie. I picked a movie. Phil picks a movie. Hostels was Eric's. Baby Driver was mine. The next one is Phil's. So yes, there'll probably be a hot chick and a little dog in it. and then we'll probably go back to Eric and just keep doing that rotation. Although again, if something new and big comes out and we want to hit that, we can meet, you know, break that pattern for an episode or two here or there.
Yep, exactly. All right, and Chrissy, you actually had a new book released in April, was it?
I did. It's called The Shadows Behind, and you can get it at Amazon or on my website.
Very good. And that's a bunch of horror short fiction, right?
Yes, it is. Yep, okay. It's horror short fiction. It's basically a lot of internal. If you enjoy the works of Edgar Allan Poe, you will probably like it. It's all about the things that haunt us.
And so that's a full-length book then, right?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Excellent. Very good. So people should check that out. All right. So anything else anybody want to bring up, like news or anything like that? I don't know if there's anything of note that you guys were planning to bring up that
not real news, but just a quick note for anybody who listens that subscribes to Shudder, which I believe all of us recommend everybody should. One of my it's come to be one of my favorite movies that we did an episode on, and I kind of boned the movie by talking some smack about it, because the first time I watched it, I got a bad copy that didn't have a great soundtrack. With the sound design as it's intended, the movie is phenomenal. It's Lovely Molly, directed by Eduardo Sanchez, who's the guy that did Blair Witch Project. It's now available on Shudder. So if you have Shudder, I would highly recommend going and checking out Lovely Molly if you've not seen that movie already. Or even if you had, it's still good.
Perfect time to watch it, too. Halloween time. And, yeah. Eric, you should just get the Blu-ray like me.
I already have one.
Yeah, it has a lot of good...
a lot of people don't buy physical media anymore. So if you're into the streaming thing, Lovely Molly is now on Shudder.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. And if you do like extras, there's a whole bunch of good stuff on the disc, including like a mini movie, which is actually like over an hour, that talks about...
It's a quote-unquote documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. About what happened.
It's all fictional bullshit, but it's still fun.
Yeah, it's still fun. It's real good. Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. And I think there was a director's commentary on that, too, as a matter of fact.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, director and screenwriter commentary, screenwriter meaning Jamie Nash, which Mike has met in person.
Watch that again. Yeah. I'm sure I watched it at some point, but I don't remember much.
Yeah.
And Jamie Nash has also worked with Eduardo Sanchez on Exists and Altered, and I recommend both of those films as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mike, those are films that you should mention as part of Halloween. That Altered film is like one that everybody forgets, and that's a pretty solid film.
I've already got my list set, so maybe next year's, because I've been doing a recommendation for 31 days, and you know we're down to 7 days left before Halloween. I want to mention, yeah.
No, I just remember one.
I would
more
suggest that Jamie Nash also does that Writer's Blockbusters podcast.
Oh, okay.
And I highly recommend people listen to that one too. I just listened to their one for Good Boys, which was fun.
I'm not even sure what that is. Good Boys.
That was a movie that just came out recently.
You'd like it. It's a lot of teenage boys acting immaturely. It's fun.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that I got a hold of the Scream Factory deluxe collection of the Omen movies and rewatched those consecutively. For me personally, the price of the whole collection was worth just getting the new 4K scan of the original movie. It looks amazing. So I was very happy to get that. And then I was also happy to rediscover that The Omen 2, Damien, is actually a pretty decent sequel. I'd forgotten that movie's actually pretty good. It's just not, you know, the original is a masterpiece, so in comparison, of course, it doesn't hold up. But still, it's very strong for a sequel. It kind of starts sliding downhill after that, and the remake is just unfortunate. But I still, as a whole collection, I would recommend picking it up if you're into the Omen series.
And I think Omen 3 is not as strong as the first two, but given the caliber of sequels in that era especially, I think it works okay as a
It's not bad, but it has a very anticlimactic ending.
That's what's so bummer about
the 3.
As they close out to that story, I think it works fine. It's just not as strong as the other two, but it's not god-awful either. I think Omen 4, which is god awful. I think it's incompetent.
It's pretty bad. Yes,
it's bad.
And is that on the disc too?
Yeah,
it's part of the collection. Yeah, it was made for TV one with a girl.
It was made for TV movie with She Omen or Lady Omen or whatever. It's just not. It's not good. It's terrible. And then the remake is just forgettable. There's really nothing in it. It's not incompetent. Well,
the thing it's pretty much a beat for beat remake. Only they take the best parts and make them not as good.
Right.
It's really lame.
It's
like the Psycho remake.
It's worse than the Psycho remake because the Psycho remake was just beat for beat. This is beat for beat, except for like
two of the absolutely most memorable scenes in the movie are changed to be not as good.
Right.
It's not there's stuff in the Psycho remake that I think if you took out the fact that it's a Psycho remake, some of it's that's well done. It's just unfortunate that it's just a beat for beat remake. And in the Omen remake, it's just a pale imitation in every way.
Yes.
It's not even literally shot for shot. It's basically how can we make this shoot this in a way that's less interesting than it was the first time.
It wasn't cast well, except for I kind of liked having Mia Farrow in there. She was fine.
Mia Farrow, and I said at the time, Mia Farrow was the highlight of the film.
But Liev Schreiber was bad casting. Julia Stiles was bad casting. And the whole thing is just kind of lame. You can clearly it was released on June 6, 2006. Clearly, some marketing guy saw that date coming up, was like, ooh, let's do an Omen remake. And that's as far as the thought process went.
Right, and probably rushed it into development to get it done.
Yeah.
All right, that's a shame. The original is one of my favorite horror films of all time.
Oh, it's a classic, absolutely. And the cleaned up scan in the collection is fantastic. It looks great.
Nice. Maybe I'll have to pick it up, the set, because I do have the original Blu-ray set from a couple of years ago. Yeah, if it's a new scan copy, maybe I'll check it out.
And, of course, as with any Scream Factory release they do, they have some new interviews on there. And one piece of trivia I picked up from watching some of those interviews is that apparently the original plan was to have Charles Bronson as the lead in The Omen. And I can't even fucking imagine that. That would be awful.
That would have been awesome. He rules.
Right, and the problem with that is that you would not for an instant believe that he was going to hesitate stabbing Damien at the end of the film.
Right. You know what's funny is that I still look at Charles Bronson as the Polish guy from The Great Escape. So everybody thinks of him this tough man, and I always look at him as a nice guy from The Great Escape.
I would just see Charles Bronson looking at the seven knives, throwing them aside, pulling out a gun, and just blasting the baby.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because Donald Pleasance, you know, everybody knows him from Halloween and all these ones. I know him from Great Escape as well, and he was a nice guy. So
I gotta watch that movie.
It's awesome. It's the best.
So, like, if you took baby Damien and threw him in a wood chipper, was he supposed to survive that?
No, well, supposed to ask out loud, Mike.
Okay.
He's supposed to come back together like the Wolfman and Monster Squad.
Okay.
Right? There you go.
I'm just saying, if I have a baby that doesn't die, I can have a whole lot of fun with that one.
Wow. I think we need to switch topics quickly.
Yes.
I'm not Serbian film fun. I'm just
Eric, one last question. You said it's a 4K rescan, but it's still a Blu-ray, right?
Yes. The whole collection is Blu-ray. The original movie has a new 4K scan. The rest of the movies do not. I believe they're re-releases of the previous material that's available on the individual Blu-ray releases. However, they do have the new Scream Factory interviews and features.
Excellent. All right, sounds good. So it carries over the old extras, plus it has a bunch of new ones.
Yep.
Oh, and I'll also, by the way, if you're making recommendations, I did catch the new movie on Shudder. Really, Shudder, we need to get paid for this shit. The movie Furies.
Oh, that was decent. I watched that too.
Yeah, and I liked that, and it did have one of the best kills of the year.
Is it episode worthy?
I wouldn't object.
Yeah, it might be. It might be.
All right, because there's three other VOD films that came out that are possible episode worthy as well. So they're slowly popping up after 8 months of crap. So
yeah.
It's getting
The Furies is interesting though, because they kind of have you the whole movie trying to figure out what's going on, and towards the end of the movie they give you enough to put it together, but you don't get that big exposition dump. And I found it to be a refreshing change of pace, all the pieces are there for you to put together in your head, but they don't have somebody say, well, this is what happened because I'm this person and I do this. That's not in there, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Now, Eric, is it an English language film?
Yes.
American or North American film or
Australian?
Or European, Australian?
I don't worry about that thing. I just
I was just curious because Shudder gets a lot of good films, but they're usually from out of states. In other words,
It wouldn't shock me to find out it's Australian. I didn't look at it up though.
Well, the accents you could have noticed.
Yeah, they can do American accents.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But did they in that movie American accent?
I don't listen to shit, Phil. You're the only one that cares about nationality.
Well, no, accents is just obvious, I thought. I mean,
I don't remember. I don't care.
No worries. All right, so let's give our final thoughts on Zombieland. Let's start with you, Mike. Oh, it's both Zombieland.
I enjoyed both films. The first one is better, and I think it's better crafted, better constructed. I think the second one probably is funnier, but the story structure is thin. So and the characters aren't as fleshed out and don't have an arc. It's just gags, but that's nothing, you know, that's nothing necessarily wrong with that either. But just know that's what you're going to get. So I recommend them both, but I put more of an asterisk on the second one if you're a fan of the first, because it really will depend on what you're willing to accept, as Eric will attest.
All right, very good. Chrissy.
I had a lot of fun with this movie. I think it in particular makes a great date movie. Just be prepared and don't take it too seriously. But yes, I highly recommend it.
All right, very good. I would say that I still felt the first one was more fun and more funnier than the second one. But I would agree with Chrissy that the second one's a great date movie. Some good zombie kills and stuff. Just make sure that you know that it's played more tongue-in-cheek than the original, which was a horror comedy, but still was a bit more grounded. And as Eric said, also a little bit more suspenseful and so forth. So it doesn't feel a lot like the first film, and that may be a problem. However, it does have some good points, including the Madison character. Also, just to have our four characters back to see them again, so some nostalgia. And it is in the quote-unquote zombie land universe, so it's still a fun film, but the first film is a must-see classic, and everybody should definitely see the first. Eric?
I agree that the first one is a classic, and everybody should check that one out. I did not care for the sequel. Although I'm glad that it brought to my attention the existence of Zoe Deutsch, because she was fantastic as the Madison character. But for me, that was really the only bright point in the movie. In general, I didn't care for it myself.
All right, very well. The two films, first one was what, 2009? Is that right? Yep, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And the new one, 2019. Basically, a direct follow up to the first. The first is available everywhere. VOD is, as well as discs. And the new one is still at theaters and will probably be there for a bit, especially during the Halloween timeframe. So check that one out at theaters. But both films are pretty much mainstream, and you can find them anywhere. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about the Zombieland movies. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.